Hi, and welcome back to the Coffee, Cake, and Kegels podcast. I'm your host, Stacey, and today I have a guest host with me. You have heard him before if you are a fan of this podcast. So it is my husband, James.
Hello.
And today we're going to talk about some of the realizations people have after a near-death experience. So I've mentioned this before that last May, my husband, what do we call it really?
Died?
Exactly. As you can see though, we can kind of laugh about it now, but he did die 3 times in a day. And I have spoken about this very briefly because I really couldn't, I felt it would be best if he would speak about his experience and, you know, talk about the realizations he's had because his life has changed since then. And so let's talk about, because I'm sure people are dying to know, how did that day start?
Well, woke up. I was, you know, a little more tired than I usually was. I usually get up between 3 and 4 a.m. So to me, it was just a normal schedule, feeling the same way. I made my way to work, still feeling like not myself, but I just thought it was from being tired. My coworker had come into the office in the early morning, just started socializing. And I just reached up to do a nice stretch, you know, like anybody else would, and next thing you know, I blacked out. She started, well, she, from her words were, she was banging on my back, trying to wake me up. So when I had come around, to me, it just felt like I took a nap. I just felt really tired, and of course, I had relieved myself, you know, all over my pants, etc. And they called an ambulance, and
So when the ambulance, well, you, after you had came back, you didn't want to take an ambulance, right?
I didn't. My first instinct was, I have to go home. I was just going to get in my car and go. And my 3 of my coworkers were there at the time. They were like putting their hands out to hold me in place, like, no, 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 you're not going anywhere.
Thank God you didn't. Could you imagine?
No. Probably wouldn't have been a good turnout.
Probably wouldn't be here now.
Truly.
Okay, so what was the next step? What happened after that?
So the ambulance came, checked me out, the EMTs, and they were trying to diagnose me on the spot, per se, just by the symptoms I was giving them. But they were like, we're going to take you in anyway, just to make sure. And their diagnosis was vasovagal. Moving on, we went to the hospital. They started checking me out, and they didn't find anything wrong right away. So they were letting me relax. And the nurse was about 15 feet in front of me, and she says, if you need anything, let me know. And something just came over me. I felt lightheaded and dizzy, and I started to sweat. Next thing I know, I'm waking up, and they're doing CPR, but I'm still unaware of what was going on, you know. So they were questioning me, are you okay, Mr. Trapanese? You just went into cardiac arrest, going on and on and on. And I was more in a state of confusion, thinking like, what the hell is going on? You know, so the decision was, let's move you to another hospital that had a special cardiac unit. And in transport, it happened again, and the EMT also had to resuscitate me with CPR again, and making me aware of what that had happened again until I got to the hospital. That's it.
So, what was going through your mind when this was happening?
Honestly, like I had said before, in my mind, I thought it was craziness. I was like, what the hell is going on here? Like, I had no idea. Because I just didn't know. Because you and I, just looking at me, I felt normal. I felt fine. I felt nothing. I didn't feel stress on my heart. I didn't feel anything other than dizziness. And just, that was pretty much it. I'm just tired.
But before that, you two have been, like, just to give a backstory, you don't ever take a break. No one can see your face, so you have to speak.
I always feel like I need to get things done, and I will overwhelm myself, you know, day in, day out, just to make sure I get it done. But when I'm done, I do really take my time to relax.
Right, but you don't, like, before this, you were working a lot of hours, and you were covering a lot of shifts for people, and, you know, you really were going, you were working so much, coming home, going to the gym. You weren't even eating enough, and you weren't hydrating enough, and all that. So, you know, your mind was overwhelmed, but your body was too.
Yeah, but when you're always moving, you're not thinking of that. You're just, it's like, you know, go, go, go. That's all you think about.
I knew you were going to say that. That's your line.
That's it.
Okay, so now you get to the hospital, and what was it like when they wheeled you in? What was your initial thoughts, feelings, perceptions?
I was just in the unknown. I had no idea. All these doctors are coming in and out with the nurses, telling me we're going to do this test and that test, and we're going to do this and so on. We contacted your wife, and, you know, at the same time, still being unaware. Obviously, I checked in. They were like, you're not leaving for at least a few days. You know, going into the week, they tested me with all types of cardiac tests. They even did an MRI. They checked my nervous system. And the conclusion was the end. The straight answer is they had no idea. So, as a suggestion, they said, we think we should put a pacemaker in you because we think you had something called a sinus node dysfunction, which means the electrical part of your heart just pretty much shorted and your heart just stopped. But they never legitimately said, yes, that's definitely the answer. They didn't know. And they also went towards the idea that also that from what the EMTs had said, that it may have been invasive vagal, because they both could give you similar symptoms. But we don't know.
Until this day, they still don't know.
They still don't know. Over a year, residual testing, repetitively. The doctors, I've had electrocardiologists and cardiologists from two different facilities tell me they just don't know.
Yeah, and the hospital that you go to now is a specialty hospital, and they still don't know.
Nope.
So, I mean, obviously we have an idea, we kind of think what it is, but nobody really will solidify that thought.
I mean, after you've tried every door, and that's the last one that's been unopened, but yet nobody has the answer, yeah, we're always going to think it is, you know.
And your electrocardiologist, when we asked him, he said, could be.
Yeah, most of the doctors I've mentioned it to, they all will dance around the topic of, you know, it being a vaccination for COVID. So, they would always end up with the conversation like, we just don't understand how a healthy 46-year-old man just dies.
The same way healthy kids on soccer fields are dying now too. But, you know, that's a whole other topic. We're not here for that today. So, what other thoughts were going through your head? Like, on an emotional level, what were you thinking when this was happening? Or when you got to, like, when you got stabilized or whatever, like, what thoughts were going through your mind?
Oh, of course, my family worrying about, you know, that they're going to be okay. Obviously, seeing, you know, the distraught pain they were going through at the same time, seeing my wife and children, you know, all family and friends around me, everybody was feeling it, because being in the unknown, it it's scary, you know, especially if you're walking on eggshells, thinking it could happen at any moment again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they didn't even have you, like, hooked up to anything.
They just had a regular heart monitor and an IV. And even the IV, they, after a while, they were like, yeah, you don't need this anymore.
Yeah. So now that this happened, what realizations have you had about life or anything, you know, that comes to mind?
It took me a while. I mean, it's been a little over a year now.
Well, before you answer that then,
yes.
Were you angry?
Yeah, you could say that. Mm-hmm. I had anger issues, stress, you know, the norm.
After this happened?
Before and after, but after it had happened, it actually, it slowly dissipated over time. It changed. I mean, in the beginning, it wasn't. It was like I couldn't wait to get back to work. And then, you know, I had a job to do. I still had that mentality of, you know, go, go, go kind of thing, you know. But other paths, as you would say, opened up for me. Other doors closed. And it made me frustrated. It made me angry. But then it just hit me. I said, why am I doing this to myself? Why am I getting angry? Why am I beating myself up? Why am I taking it out on my family? You know, a lot of other things. And I gave it up. I gave up a lot of things, especially when it came to work, money, the unnecessary stresses.
Right. Because you always were, let's talk about that. Like, you were always worried about money.
Yeah.
Where did that stem from, though?
I guess you could say my childhood, you know, I grew up in a single family household, my mother raising four boys, you know, she struggled working two jobs, trying to make ends meet. We all went out at a young age, started working from a young age, and always worried about where the next dollar was coming from, trying to get ourselves, I guess you could say, better, in a sense, financially. But it became like an addiction, you know. And when the money ran low, you got stressed out, and so on and so forth. So.
Mm. And that's a belief system you obviously adopted from childhood.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, because we get our beliefs from other people. Okay. And, like, just a little bit about your job. What happened with that?
Well, I was appointed a position, you could say a temporary promotion aspect, with the belief that, you know, anything could happen to where I could go back to my old position, but I was told that it wouldn't happen that way, that it would be quite some time if it did change. So obviously everything happened with me, you know, with the incident with my heart, and I was, like I said, I needed to get back to work. I was back to work in less than a month. And by the time I got back there, I was told, by the way, while you were out, we filled the position. And I just felt slighted. I felt like, you know, and betrayed, yeah, you could say that. So the anger came back. And I pretty much told my job, go scratch. And that was another point in my life where I realized, what the hell am I doing to myself? This isn't worth it. And that's when I started going down a different road. But I needed those things to hit me, to make me realize.
Yeah, you needed a catalyst for change. Mm-hmm. There's always one, mm-hmm. or multiple.
Yeah.
So you were killing yourself for your job, for a job that really had no, I don't want to say no use for you, because obviously there is a use for you, but it's like they kind of just didn't care. Like, at the end of the day, our jobs will always be there.
Yeah.
You know, and we have to look out for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so what else, like, what did you, like, how did you start to change your life?
I got rid of the unnecessary things. I stopped working on stress. Stopped worrying about money, which, trust me when I tell you, I've gotten a lot better. And I said to myself,
I said self.
I was given a privilege through my job, sadly, from 9/11, the World Trade Center event, because I had worked down there. We were given 9/11 sick time, which is unlimited. So a little bird chirped in my ear. A coworker of mine said, "What are you doing here? Why are you stressing yourself out over this? You know, you need to start taking care of yourself more." And again, it hit me. I said, "You know what? You're right. I'm gonna take off work as much as I need." And I saw when I was taking off work, and I'm not losing anything over it, that stress was lifting off my shoulders.
But also to reiterate, you do have 9/11 related
issues.
Well, so you are warranted this. It's not like you're abusing it or anything like that.
No, yeah, it all comes to full circle, but I never took advantage of it before, so I'm going to. And my life has changed because of those reasons. I come home. Now it's, I see my family, you know, I'm taking care of my family now. I'm not just walking in the door, "What's for dinner? Oh, I got chores to do. I got to run here, I got to run there," and feel overwhelmed knowing in 6 hours I still got to go back to work. You know what I mean? So I'm just living my life.
Mm-hmm. So what new adventures or things have you decided to embark on? And let's talk about how you got there. Because two people mentioned this to you and you were like, "No way." Yeah. So.
Yeah, you could say that too. Yeah. Well, I guess you could say on my spiritual journey, I've tried speaking to all types of people out there to help guide me, including my wife, you know, to show me different ways to alleviate myself from all these woes I was talking about. So I went to go see, I guess you can call her an advisor. I don't know what it is.
Avaya?
No, Bhakti Devi.
Oh, Bhakti Devi. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what
was it?
Oh, she's a healer. Okay. Well, she advised me a lot for some. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of everything, she had mentioned that I was going to write. I would just look at her like, me? I'm like illiterate when it comes to especially writing. But she's like, you have a very, you know, your background is very art, drawing, writing. She goes, "I see it all around you." So going forward, I had heard it again through a friend of my wife's who read tarot cards. And she had said the same thing. Now, mind you, this is
2 years later.
2 years, yeah. A year and a half to 2 years later. So, and they've never met each other. Of course, my wife would tell them the same story. She had mentioned the same thing. And then I said, "You know what? I'm going to go for it." And she told me, she goes, "Just write. Just put it all down." She goes, "It doesn't matter how it sounds or how it looks. Just put it all down."
Because this particular friend is also an author.
Right.
She's actually going to be on the podcast too.
Okay. So, yeah, she advised me best she could. And that's all I've been doing. So, technically, I just finished my first book, as you can say. But it needs a lot of work.
Yeah, because you asked me to read it, and I was an English teacher, so I was reading it with a very critical eye, and I was stressing myself out, so I'm like, I can't do this for you.
Yes. I say your wife is, or your husband is your best and your worst critic.
Actually, we are our own worst critic.
And then stop.
So, okay, so what else have you realized about life?
I don't really know. I mean, I take it day to day, and I just live now. I wake up, or I go to bed, hoping that I will wake up, and God forbid, no other issues, and I just live my life. I just take it day to day, and we do plan for our future and so on, but I don't stress about it anymore. I don't overthink about it. I talk to my wife about things more than I ever had before. You know what I mean? because that matters. It matters having that secondary opinion, whether it be a friend, your wife, your mother, your father. Just getting that different point of view, it helps put things in perspective for you.
And when things, when stresses do come, like what do you, what goes through your head now? Like when a stress comes, are you just like, it's not important?
Depending on the stress, yes. Sometimes I say to myself, I need to guard your chair. I gotta hit something. But most of the time, I will sit there and I'll change my train of thought. You know, whether it be writing again or just whatever it takes my mind off it to help the situation, because I know now that it's going to turn out well. Everything's going to turn out fine. You know, look at our lives now compared to what it was 7, 8 years ago. You know, it's just different, and we've only progressed, and we're going to keep on progressing. Yeah.
So, what advice? Well, I'm sure everyone's dying to know this. Because you had a near-death experience. I know you keep saying, no, I technically died. You did, but it's called a near-death experience.
I came back, okay.
Yeah. When you die and come back, it's a near death. Because death is permanent. Did you see anything?
Straight answer, no. I did not. If I had to try to elaborate a little bit of what I felt, I guess, or kind of saw, you know, compared to this, you know, when you're dreaming and you're kind of coming out of the dream, it feels like you're pulling yourself out of sleep and the dream starts to dissipate. That's what I felt when I was waking up, but, well, I guess I was dead, you could say. Black, just...
Nothing.
Nothing. I didn't feel, think, see, I just, nothing.
Now, I have a perception of why I think that is, but why do you think that is?
Because it wasn't ready.
Yeah. You weren't ready.
I've had other incidents happen in my life through my years, and I've seen, I guess you could say, visions, but for this time in particular, I saw nothing.
So the other times that happened to you, by the way, he's a cat, he has 9 lives.
I've already been through 5. It's not even funny either, but go figure.
It's not funny, but we can laugh about it.
Yes.
What is life without humor, you know? The first time something happened to you like that, tell them about that. So what exactly happened the first time?
When I was a child.
Yeah.
Briefly, I was sick. I had the flu. My mother and my father, we had to go to a court hearing in Manhattan. We go to Manhattan. Mind you, I had to be maybe 10, 11 years old. I was hungry, even though I had the flu. Stopped at McDonald's.
Worst thing to get a kid with the flu. Right,
exactly. I ate like nothing, and then all of a sudden I felt uncomfortable in my stomach, and I go to the bathroom, and I open the door, and the cleaning lady was in there. Of course, it was like a one-stall bathroom out of this huge McDonald's, go figure. So I went back to the table. I'm like, I have to go, but the cleaning lady's in there. They were like, just go wait by the door. Next thing you know, I opened the door. She was out, but I guess my body just gave in. And I went out again. I blacked out. And in that vision, I had seen, it was very pink and fluorescently kind of cloudy kind of vision. And off in the distance in that coloring, I saw shadows of people just walking by. Just like it was if you were watching foot traffic on a sidewalk. And then next thing you know, I hear my mother calling my name, and I felt like I got sucked back, and I obviously woke up with them standing over me, trying to bring me around.
Which is interesting, because the pink mist, whatever you saw, is it's one of the dimensions. It's one of the 7 dimensions to heaven, to God.
I guess so.
It's the one right before him. It's the one right before him.
Well, I don't know how to take that, but...
Yeah. Well, and I can't help it, but I'm just thinking, I'm hearing your father's voice saying, you know, I don't know if we could say the word.
I guess. But,
no, we'll just, it's okay.
Okay.
Your father's saying, he shit himself.
Yeah. Pretty much.
And he had to wear his trench coat, right?
Yes, he had a trench coat that day, thank God. We stripped my clothes off, threw it in the garbage pail right there in the bathroom. And next thing you know, they were hustling me out of the McDonald's to head home. So yes, what an experience. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, I mean, you know, yeah. I hear your father's voice saying it. Right. And your mother saying that, you know. And then what was the next time?
Next time...
There was a few times.
Well, they say when I was born, but obviously I wouldn't recall that. But I don't... That's something my mother would have to tell me.
Well, you did... Your mom said you almost died because you had...
spinal meningitis.
Yeah, spinal meningitis.
Yeah. And then going forward, I was a teenager. Restless. Stupid.
You mean reckless.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Reckless and stupid, I guess. Sorry. I got into a car accident. My head went through the windshield after the car had impacted a telephone pole. But this is where it drew me for a loop, because even though my head was in the windshield, I started coming around, but I felt like somebody was there and they put their hands on my shoulders and they helped pull me out of the windshield and laid me back in the seat. And the music was blasting, of course, because I was a crazy kid. Somebody lowered the volume. And then the next thing you know, I heard in the distance, sirens were coming, you know, from all directions. And then I couldn't see anything because my head was literally split open and blood was covering my eyes. You know, I just heard the commotion of them trying to get me out of the car into the gurney and so on. That initial experience, somebody or something was there, and nobody else was in the car with me, of course.
And then your mom went to a psychic, right? Or medium years later, and she said it was your grandfather?
Yeah, she said that he was with me, and he pretty much helped the situation.
And then what was the other time? Was when you blacked out from a blood clot?
I don't think that was really...
No, I think
I
just blacked out.
Yeah, I had a blood clot in my leg, being out in the bar, go figure. And of course I blacked out in that bathroom, but I didn't relieve myself, go figure. But yes, I did have to go to a hospital, and they said I had a blood clot in my leg, go figure. But I don't think I died.
Right.
That was a...
Interesting.
I think so. I find it very weird that if you're thinking about it now, putting all of the stories together, it all revolves around me blacking out. I have a lot of head trauma.
Well, I mean, you had spinal meningitis.
Yeah.
When you really think about it, that's probably what did it. Like, what did a lot, like, even with, like, being learning disabled when you were little and everything, that was the spinal meningitis, you know? It affected your brain. So what advice would you give someone if they had this experience? Well, like, what would you tell them? What's words of wisdom or pearls of wisdom or whatever that you could say?
I'm sure they've heard it all before, but most of it is repetitive. But yeah, just live your life. Don't let these, I guess you could say, little things, even though they may seem big to others, don't let them control your life. You know, that's really it. Love your family, live for your family, and just live every day. And that's what I say now, because every doctor, they never had an answer. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to hold myself back anymore. I'm just going to go out and do what I got to do. And everybody's like, whoa, don't do that. You're going to, no. You see, because I was never diagnosed, that means there's no prohibiting from what I do. I'm just going to live.
And that's really words for everyone to live by, not just someone who had like a near death experience, you know? Mm-hmm. We all have to learn to like not take ourselves so seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
And maybe not get hung up on,
I would say, material things. you know, things that are unimportant to you that can easily be replaced. Mm-hmm. And family, loved ones can't be replaced.
Very true. Any last words that you'd like to say or express?
No, I think I got my point across. Okay, thank you.
No, thank you for being my guest today. And as always, guys, thank you so much for listening.